father.
Sit down, man.
Glenn Beck.
Sit down, man.
Rand Paul.
Sit down, man.
LL Cool J.
Sit down, man.
Netanyahu.
Sit down, man.
Sarah Palin.
Sit down, man.
Newt Gingrich.
Sit down, man.
Toby Keith.
Sit down, man.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Ari Raben-Huft, who is a Vice President of Research and Communications at Media Matters for America. He is the co-author with David Brock of The Fox Effect, How Roger Ailes Turned a Network into a Propaganda Machine. And their latest ebook just out is The Benghazi Hoax. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ari Raben-Huft.
Thank you for having me.
And why is this necessary? I guess it's necessary because this whole storm in a teacup issue has been going on forever. But have they succeeded in doing anything more than muddy the waters? I mean, we've just had the same sort of rabid crew of Republicans shut down the government and threaten to tank the economy. And now, I mean, even one of the architects of it, Ted Cruz, turned around and welcome government workers coming back to work as though he was responsible for them returning to work as opposed to them being sent home on furlough. And then you had both he and Palin were down there at the World War II Memorial grandstanding about not letting vets in to a memorial that they were responsible for shutting down. So I'm just wondering, in this political environment, does reality have any traction?
Well, among a certain set of people, no. The Benghazi scandal has been going on for 13 months now. And it begins with Mitt Romney's campaign believing this was an electorally salient issue, something that could swing the election in their favor. That obviously was not the truth. It picks up with this concept that it can they can use this to defeat and undermine any attempt Hillary Clinton would like to make in running for president. And why this book was important to write, which is where you began, is there's been no significant pushback from progressives to explain the truth about this scandal, and that is very disappointing.
So how much then, you mentioned the Hillary Clinton possible presidential campaign and that this seemed like a fairly obvious and flagrant attempt to head off that possibility. I mean, at times they seem to go almost insane with their speculation, saying that somehow she staged that accident. And my understanding is that when she collapsed and hit her head, that was actually pretty serious. And if anything, that may have an effect on whether or not she'll run for president more than anything else.
I mean, that was a serious medical issue, and it's really shocking that conservatives were so deluded they would make light of it. They would suggest that she was faking a concussion in order to avoid testifying on Benghazi, but that's how insane this scandal became.
So did the Democratic minority chair, do you think he really took them to task sufficiently? Because ISIS being grandstanding on, you know, he did that, went after the ATF, who, of course, are the perennial enemy of the NRA, and got nowhere. Are you confident that the Democratic co-chair was able to at least deal with reality and perhaps put this guy in his place?
Look, I think the most interesting piece of this has been the efforts made by Daryl Issa to keep Democrats out of these investigations. Traditionally, these committees operate where there's a majority-minority report, where the minority is allowed to participate fully in these investigations. And there have been consistent examples all the way through where Daryl Issa has excluded the ranking member on the committee from these investigations, excluded minority staff. And he does this because they know that under any nonpartisan, any bipartisan scrutiny, their charges won't hold up.
But in terms of using the media, which is what this is all about, it has nothing to do with the truth. I guess my question is, are the Democrats setting the record straight here? Because this guy is so cynical, Issa.
And I mean, I feel like they have an extreme uphill battle, primarily because, and one of the reasons we wrote this book is Democrats and progressives, especially in the media, have been scared about taking this issue head on because it's confusing, it's complicated, it involves tons of minutia on issues, and frankly, they feel like, why should they give Daryl Issa any credence? And the problem is that gives him free rein to go on Fox, on conservative talk radio, in other friendly venues, and sell lies to the American people.
Again, I'm speaking with Ari Rabinhaft, who is a vice president of research and communications at Media Matters for America. He's the co-author with David Brock of The Fox Effect, How Roger Ailes Turned a Network into a Propaganda Machine. And their latest e-book just out is The Benghazi Hoax. So in terms of the ambassador going to Benghazi on the September the 11th of 2012, obviously a fairly incendiary day, is there any clarity over, I mean, as far as I know, it was supposedly opening a book fair, which in the middle of a city that's so politically unstable with, you know, essentially warlords running around with pickup trucks with heavy machine guns, etc. Sounds like something out of Mad Max. Is there any clarity on why he went there on that particular day?
Look, Chris Stevens is unique among the American diplomatic corps in terms of his courageousness. And what people have to realize is Benghazi was not an unfamiliar city to him. He had been in Benghazi as the Libyan civil war was taking place. He actually went into Benghazi. He snuck in on a Greek freighter to set up the U.S. diplomatic presence in Benghazi in the midst of the Libyan civil war. He was somebody who knew all the local players. He knew the militia heads locally. So it wasn't that, and he hadn't been back to the city since he had taken over his post as ambassador to the country. So it wasn't that outrageous that he would want to visit a city that he was both well-connected and, frankly, very well-liked in by the people, the government, and many of even these militias.
So what happened then? The people that attacked the compound that he was staying in, I understand that they weren't really targeting him, that in effect he was collateral damage because they'd set the car on fire and the smoke went out and he was upstairs. Did they even know he was there?
We don't know the answer to those questions, and frankly, nobody does. I mean, these attacks, there are a series of two attacks that took place on two different facilities in Benghazi. First, the diplomatic compound is what you're referring to, where militia and attackers literally stormed the compound and set fire to buildings, and Chris Stevens and Sean Smith, the diplomatic information officer, died from smoke inhalation there. Then there was a second attack several hours later on the CIA annex about a mile away from the diplomatic facility. And that attack on the CIA annex was with mortars, killing two former Navy SEALs one of whom was sent to Benghazi as part of a rescue mission, actually, to get everybody out. So you're talking about two separate attacks, and with very little information out in public, there is some, we presume there is some classified, there are more classified details than there are public details, but my assumption is more will be coming out about this in the next year.
So in terms of the first attack, wasn't there early reports that it was something of an inside job, that the security people that were supposedly protecting it had either, they certainly capitulated when the assailants showed up?
So there were two sets of guards at the compound. There was a first set of guards who ran and fled, and those guards were the equivalent of, let's say, the guards you see in a parking garage.
Mm-hmm.
They were literally unarmed guards whose job it was to raise and lower the gate. They capitulated instantly, which is what you'd expect for unarmed guards when you have a gun pointed at their head. There was a second set of militia known as the February 17th militia that was contracted to provide armed security, and there are questions both ways where some fled and some joined the fight.
And is there any indication that it was an inside job, that they had...
I mean, there's no indication it was an inside job among the people who were in those militias who were there that night. There were instances where, for example, a Libyan police car assigned to the front of the embassy pulled away before the attack. There were indications like that, that yes. But the important point, the bigger point there is that Libya, as you said before, Benghazi was a city full of these militias. You couldn't do business in the city without doing business with these militias. When our rescue teams arrived at the Benghazi airport, and this is documented in a book on Benghazi called Under Fire, it took them a few hours to get from the Benghazi airport to the CIA annex because they had to negotiate with a bunch of these militias.
So the Republican criticisms center around the idea that it was possible to send rescue teams in, and for reasons that they never explained, Hillary Clinton and the State Department dropped the ball, and they hung this poor guy out to dry.
Except the rescue team was sent in.
Right. Well, so just explode some of that nonsense, if you will, Ari.
Okay, sure. So there's a number of layers to this nonsense. So the first layer is that the president and the secretary of state did nothing. President Obama, when he heard about this, ordered Leon Panetta to deploy all necessary assets to take care of this problem. Leon Panetta said, you know, said go, and teams started deploying. Now, Robert Gates said a lot of the people who view the military in this way, who think we're everywhere and can respond in 30 seconds at any time, have a cartoonish view of how our military operates and its capabilities. It takes, when you say fuel the jets, you actually have to fuel the jets, get the pilots to fly them, load them up with bombs, you know, get people on them, arm a team, brief a team, get intelligence from on the ground. So it takes some time to do that. A team did leave. So the first thing is when our compound came under attack, the annex, after figuring they needed to respond, the CIA annex sent a rescue team over to the compound. A second rescue team deployed from Tripoli that arrived in Benghazi several hours after, when they had already evacuated the compound and they had retreated to the CIA annex. There was another moment that Republicans have made light of. Supposedly there was a stand-down order given, except Lieutenant Colonel Gibson, who was the person who supposedly was given the stand-down order, has testified under oath that he was never given a stand-down order. So that kind of blows up that rumor.
So what was the reason why the CIA people weren't able to affect the rescue, and at the same time, whether they were subsequently attacked after the annex was on fire, right?
So the annex was on fire and burned, basically. The CIA, there were five security people in the compound who were American. Now, they were kind of off for the night. They were inside. Sean Smith was actually playing a video game at the time, and he typed into the multiplayer game. He typed in a four-letter word and then said gunfire. And him and the ambassador were being protected by one group in one building on the compound. The other three were outside. They went to another building to grab their weaponry, and that firefight emerged. People from the CIA annex, when they heard about this, went across town to go get them. While they were moving across town, the building that the ambassador was in is burning. So they retreat to kind of a safe area. The ambassador and the security person who was with them tried to lead the ambassador and the communications officer out through a window. As soon as he opened the window, he realized they weren't following him. He went back in several times to try to retrieve them. Could not. Ultimately, the team from the CIA annex found the body of Sean Smith, the communications officer, but couldn't find the ambassador before they decided they had to retreat to the CIA compound.
So, Ari Rabinhaft, in terms of the author of the ebook just out, The Benghazi Hoax, in terms of the attack on the CIA annex, the fact that they had mortars meant that they'd already sighted the place, probably, right?
I've asked about this. Mortars are very hard weapons to fire accurately. And the mortars that were fired were pretty professionalized weapons. The people who did that in the mortar, mind you, this was several hours after the initial attack, had to have some level of intelligence to hit There was a burst of five mortars. Three hit the roof. Two men were killed. To have that level of accuracy, you would have to have knowledge of topography and other elements. So yes, that the second attack, you might presume some sort of planning.
And don't they know who did this? I mean,
the theory is it was Ansar al-Sharia,
right? But
which is an al-Qaeda linked militia that operates in the Benghazi area.
And it's hardly a coincidence then that they did it on the anniversary of 9/11, isn't that? That's been a source of criticism, has it not? Because the assumption is that this is likely to be an anniversary, because so often terrorists attack on anniversaries of other terrorist attacks. That's a pattern, isn't it?
Right, but what is the answer? To say there's no criticism, this is an issue where the administration is deserving of no criticism on Benghazi. The Accountability Review Board cited 29 different examples of things the administration can do to improve themselves in terms of security at embassies and consulates and diplomatic facilities. 29 different things. Though that's a very important report. Conservatives, though, have dismissed that report because it doesn't say Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are somehow guilty of leaving men to die. That report is a serious and somber assessment of how to improve security in the region. So it's not an issue of no fault. It's an issue of, do you think this is a grand conspiracy by Barack Obama to leave Americans to die so we can win re-election, which is the accusation the right essentially has been making?
Well, other criticism that's not so rabid suggests that there was a mindset that wanted to downplay instability in Libya and to portray Libya as a success. And, of course, so much of the criticism you hear about Libya is that
the question is, what is the result of that mindset? Did President Obama do something that could have saved these lives? Could this attack have been prevented? And so far, none of the legitimate inquiries, legitimate investigations, have been able to ever make that connection, have been ever a look at the record. This is a huge, for an incident of its size, we have to remember U.S. diplomatic facilities since 1998 have been attacked 157 times. Nine of those times, there were U.S. fatalities. So, and of these incidents, the Benghazi attack has been the subject of 18 congressional hearings. It's been the subject of 25,000 pages of documentation being sent from the administration to the congressional investigators. It's been the subject of hundreds of interviews that congressional investigators have conducted. If there was a there that could tie this to Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, I think they would have done it.
Well, I'm glad that you've done this book then, Ari Rabinhaft, in order to, I guess alert people to this hoax that's been going on for so long. And we live in an age of propaganda. It's clear that Fox News is the Pravda of the Republican Party. And we can't expect any decency from them. But I take it you've done this as an attempt to wake up progressives to sort of do some pushback here.
And to say we shouldn't be scared of this issue. We should embrace these attacks and say we as progressives want to do everything we can to make government work. Because as progressives, we're not about government, we're about good government. And the lessons of the Accountability Review Board, it would be completely appropriate for Darrell Issa to hold a hearing to say, has the State Department done everything in this report to make our embassies safer? That's a completely appropriate investigation to undertake. But they've bypassed that to go on a witch hunt, and that is the problem.
Well, Ari Rabinhaft, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Ari Rabinhaft, who's the Vice President of Research and Communication at Media Matters of America. He's the co-author with David Brock of The Fox Effect, How Roger Ailes Turned a Network into a Propaganda Machine. And their latest e-book just out is The Benghazi Hoax. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Tell stories to me about the places he has.
time when